Haunted Podcast. Ooh, this podcast is spooky.
I shouldn't have taken a sip of water. I almost just sprayed it everywhere.
Welcome to PCMC Halloween 2020.
Oh, no.
You know it's Halloween all month long here at PCMC. Ooh.
I really liked the how do you do a Halloween.
Oh, how do you do a Halloween in a year that it's a complete nightmare?
Oh man.
You do it, I guess.
You just...
Yeah.
You just hope for the serial killer to make it quick.
Yeah. Did you see some... I just saw online, it was like, what was the number one costume the year you were born?
Oh, okay.
Did you see that?
No.
I was born in 1983. Madonna was the number one costume.
Really?
Lots of people dressing up like Madonna.
Aw.
Isn't that fun?
I like that.
The Material Girl.
Okay.
As they said.
Hey. I feel like she's trying to dress up as Madonna now.
Oh, come on. You keep that commentary to yourself. This is a pro-Madonna podcast. So what you're hearing is the terrifying, spooky voice of Janine Gagliardi.
My kids will feel that way one day.
Jumping Janine. Is that spooky?
Jumping Janine. I don't even know. Jumping.
Screaming. You know Screaming, what's his name? Fuck.
Oh.
The guy who's saying put a spell on me?
A Howlin' Wolf.
No.
Yeah, it's Howlin' something.
It's Screaming.
I think it's Howlin'.
Let me find it.
All right. I put a spell on you, guy.
Yeah. Screaming Jay Hawkins.
I thought it was Howlin' Jay Hawkins.
No, Screaming Jay Hawkins. He's a weird dude. He had like 30
children.
Is he
children. Alive?
No.
Oh, he's like still with us?
No. My word, no. He had 30, I think like 30 children with 30 women. Something crazy like that.
Well, at least
like,
he didn't have 30 children like, with one woman, because that woman would be walking funny for the rest of her life.
My word. Yeah, that's a weird song. Go and listen to the original song.
Okay.
Skip over the Bette Midler for once in your life.
I never will.
Listen to the original. It's wild. It's crazy. And like, if you could find a live, I just watched a live performance of it, and he's like dressed like a witch doctor.
What?
He's weird. There's a whole, anyway, he's a whole weird, interesting guy.
Okay.
So yeah. Halloween 2020. So last year we did the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
And I got you. Technically, I got Henry, but you kind of just fucking took it.
Well, he's not allowed to touch it. You should see what he does to the books in this house. You'd be thanking me.
I gave you the Haunted Mansion children's book.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's like a piece of artwork. I love it. I actually put it up as art.
Nice.
Among my Halloween decor. Beautiful. I will do so again this year. Although I'll probably read it to him this year because.
Yes.
But not for him to touch with his filthy little hands.
No touching. He'll inherit it when he's old enough to...
When I die, he can have it.
When I die. they're reading your will. And you, Henry.
I bequeath.
The Haunted Mansion.
It's like, what the hell is book. This thing? that comes with a CD-ROM.
It comes with a CD of the attraction.
It does. Of all the music.
Which I listen to in my car.
Just at
all
night.
The time.
Just okay, but what are you listening to there? Just the Haunted Mansion. Yeah.
I can imagine it. I can imagine the attraction in my head.
Oh my God.
So you're the only person in my life that we exchange Halloween
That's
gifts.
It. Now it's a thing.
Not Christmas, not ever. Never.
I will never exchange Christmas gifts with you.
I got you a Christmas gift once. And it was the complete series of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And I have it still.
Do you really?
It's downstairs.
Fantastic. So I got you something from Home Goods.
Yeah. Okay. So I have it. You can hear the crinkling of the paper.
Ooh, spooky crinkling.
This is. Okay, I can't wait. Oh, what is it? Oh, I love it so much. Yay. Okay.
It's kitschy decor.
It is. Okay, so it's a... A rumble line?
Okay.
Sure, maybe a parade of Halloween characters that we know and love.
They look kind of Precious Moments-y.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a mummy banging a drum with a bone.
Yeah.
Followed by a pumpkin in a nightgown, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A cute little witch and a vampire who is having the best day of his whole life.
I made up a story for it. And
okay.
The witch and the vampire, which you can see their faces, they're human little kids, and they don't realize that the mummy and pumpkin are ghouls.
Actually ghouls. and are leading them to hell.
Yeah, the drummer is leading them like a Pied Piper into their doom.
It says, Happy Halloween. It's like a mantelpiece.
Yeah, it's like...
You put it right on. I'm going to put it right on the piano.
Yeah, I love can't wait. Kitschy I love shit like that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, love it.
Awesome. Thank you. And oh, I love Halloween gifts. All gifts should be Halloween gifts.
I
this is
agree. Okay. This has your maiden name on it when you were a maiden.
When I was a maiden, young maiden.
Are you legally still your maiden name?
No, I'm not. My name has been legally changed, but I think my Etsy account is still my maiden name.
It's thematically... It's themed to the episode.
Themed to the episode.
So what you've got me is a print of a tarot card, the Beast, but it's the Beast from what we're going to talk about today on the show, which is Over the Garden Wall. And you've got Greg and Wirt and the Beast with the lantern.
They have a whole set, Tarot of the Unknown.
Really?
It's a whole tarot card set. So and then they sell the prints individually.
I'm going to frame this.
I love it. I love the look. I really love the whole set. It's really cool.
No, this is absolutely right up my alley.
Yay!
This is like I don't know if you... Well, you don't have Instagram, so you don't see the shit I waste all my money on. Look what I recently bought. And this is... You have to... I don't know if you can get the scale in this because it's big.
Oh, wow. No, I can see it. I can see how big it is.
Yeah, it's a poster of the Haunted Mansion with Mickey in front of it, like in a nightgown looking spooked.
It's so funny because Mickey is so apart from the mansion. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of toys and stuff with him in it. Mm-hmm. And I guess he's staying there right now.
I love it. Yeah.
And I like that it's two-toned, like it's just blue. Uh-huh. And so, yeah. So I really love this. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So cute. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Over the Garden Wall.
All right.
This can't turn into another 5-hour episode like when we talked about Love, Death, and Robots.
Oh, God. Okay.
But there are 10 episodes of this, and I do have notes on every episode.
Every single one. So Over the Garden Wall is a mini series that aired on Cartoon Network in 2014. It's a 10-part mini series, but like a lot of things on Cartoon Network, or like all things on Cartoon Network, the episodes are like 12 minutes each. Mm-hmm. It's available on HBO Max now in its entirety. Beautiful. It's based on a short film that Patrick Mahale, who's the writer, creator, like storyboard artist, made called Tome of the Unknown, which is available on YouTube.
Wait, is that the pilot or is that different from the pilot?
It's, I think they call it the pilot, but it's...
Is that the one where there's a car?
Yes, the watermelon car. Yeah. So it's this 10-part series, and it's, I don't know, let's get into it, I guess.
It's, well, you recommended this to me last year. Mm-hmm. And
because they said we watch it every year, Bill and I watch it ever since it aired.
Oh, really?
We watch
so you were
it
there
every
from the
year.
Beginning.
Yeah.
Did
so
you watch it as it
I
aired?
I watched it as it aired. So I had DVR at the time. So this is like, you know, going Whoa. Back. It was 2014. I think we watched it because we were watching Adventure Time.
Yeah. And the
and it would, and the commercials. Worked he worked on he? Adventure Time. And a lot of it is sort of reminiscent of Adventure Time. But the commercials for like it was an event. Because Cartoon Network had never had a miniseries before. And so it was like this new event coming. And it looked gorgeous. It looked spooky. It was airing in the fall. It is such like an autumnal little
autumnal
piece of art.
Like it's perfect for Halloween.
But also but there's turkeys.
It's like, not aesthetically Halloween. Mm-hmm. It's much more aesthetically autumn.
Fall. Yeah, it's beautiful. And then it ends with snow. So it's like it's the whole season.
Right.
And also there's like a school episode. So it's like it's got all the little bits of fall. It's got going back to school. Yeah. It's got Halloween. It's got Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's got all the fall hits.
Yeah. I watched it last year for the first time. And I've watched it 3 times now. Mm-hmm. And I've only watched it as like a 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I watched it.
So it's 120 minutes like altogether, I think.
And it doesn't have a 3-act structure, but it holds together as a nice one viewing. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to watch it every year.
Mm-hmm. Because, I love it.
Because it's dense and there's stuff in it. And I wanted to do, also this month, me and Anthony Buongiorno did a semiotic kind of read on It Follows. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to do a little bit of a semiotic thing for Over the Garden Wall, because it is...
There's a lot to mine here.
Yeah, there's a lot of thing. There's some direct things where I'm like, what is this symbolized? What mm-hmm. does this mean, if anything? And yeah, there's just so much there. You know, it took me like 4 hours to watch it yesterday because I kept pausing and mm-hmm. taking notes. Because I'm a fucking nerd.
It's so let's say it's like a Babes in the Woods story.
Yes.
Two brothers. The older brother is Wirt. The younger brother is Greg. We join them. Is it in medias res or in media res? Because I feel like I always screw it up.
I think in media res.
In media res. Which okay.
I wrote in my notes too. In yeah, media res.
It's always in media res. Like I feel like every little vignette is in, yeah, like we're joining them and they're right. already in the action.
Some of the episodes I think could be even switched.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have a great idea of the time that they're spending.
Right. There. How long they're there. How many nights they've slept there. It seems right. like they spend a couple of nights there at different points.
It also has, and I say this too often, I guess, but it also has a sort of dream logic where.
Oh, it's very
they
dream-like,
know
the
that
whole
they're
thing.
Lost.
Yeah.
But they're not aware of. Well, we should start by saying spoiler alert
mm-hmm.
for this entire series. If you haven't watched it, go watch it and then come back and join our conversation.
It's really worthwhile. It's so yeah. good.
We find out in the end that they live in the 70s or 80s. I think 70s.
I don't know what decade it is.
I think
cassettes
70s.
Exist.
But I looked that up
because
I thought, oh, that's 80s. But cassettes start in the late 60s.
Wow. Okay. So here's two clues as to when it could be, because mm-hmm. it's either very early or very late, like late 90s, or like, I don't think it's like early 2000s, but like, I would say.
I didn't think 90s at all.
I would say because Sarah says she doesn't have a cassette player. So it's either like new technology that she doesn't have in her house, right. or it's so obscure now that she doesn't have it.
See, I think 70s.
Okay. Bill was saying it's probably 70s or 80s. I was skewing more
80s.
It does look very 70s. It has a 70s feel to it.
We're jumping to the last episode.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
So yeah, so it
they're lost in the woods.
Right,
and like the first conversation is like, how did we get here?
Where are we going?
Where are we going? Like, we're lost. Where are we?
And we should say what they look like. Mm-hmm. Wirt is dressed in kind of a dunce cap kind of cone.
Like a bright red cone, conical
and
hat.
And a Civil War Union
cape.
Cape.
Yeah, a blue cape.
And
then Greg has like green little overalls
adorable.
On. They almost look like lederhosen. And then yeah. he's got like a tea kettle on his head.
Yeah, and we don't find out until the very last episode
why
that
he has that tea kettle.
He's an elephant.
He's dressed as an elephant. So cute.
And so yeah, when you see them and they're lost mm-hmm. in the woods, which is the woods reappear so often
right.
in mythology of like, you know, some place where you go when you are, you know, there's danger. And
mm-hmm.
so because of the way they look, you kind of think like this is a fairy tale.
Right. Because they don't look of a specific era.
Right.
It's sort of timeless, but at the same time, old fashioned.
Right. Because you also hear like music that's very ragtimey.
Yeah. It's
very American.
Yes.
There's very little European anything.
I
in
was
this.
Asking Bill because he's like the resident musical
yeah.
scholar. And he's like, this is Appalachian folk. Essentially, mm-hmm. like that's the type of music that it sort of covers, or American roots music.
Yes, 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 yes. So yeah, they are lost in the woods,
mm-hmm. but
and it's an odyssey. I mean, they
yeah.
meet people along the way.
Along the way.
They go one place, they go to another place, they trust one person, they try to find another person.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of magical goings on.
Mm-hmm. There's witches in this world.
Yeah,
there's supernatural creatures.
Yeah, there's danger. There's a beast.
They both roll with the things that they discover
yeah.
and also are startled and question them. So like when they meet Beatrice, who's like the third main character, is this bluebird who's
right.
talking to them.
Yeah.
Wirt is like, whoa, you're talking. You're a bird. You're not supposed to talk.
Right.
But other things like pumpkin people at that point, I guess once they got over the talking bluebird, it was like anything goes, I guess, in this world.
Yeah. And Beatrice is voiced by Melanie Lynskey.
She's got such a great
voice. The voice acting is great.
Fantastic.
For Greg is voiced by Colin Dean, who is a real little boy.
He's a little boy.
Which
little
I
boy
love
voice.
When they do that.
Mm-hmm. And a great performance by him.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking this time around how this can be thought of as like the death of childhood.
Right.
Because both brothers, I think, represent two different parts of childhood. You've got Wirt, who's an adolescent, who's nervous about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Greg, who's... He's that so confident because he's young and he doesn't get how scary the world can be.
Right.
And he's so like, even when like you're mean to him, he's like, go get him. He's like, so,
yeah.
Like, he's so,
even when he's in danger, he's enthusiastic about everything.
Right, right, right. Like in the first episode, they are being chased by what they think is the beast. It's this big giant like wolf.
Yeah.
And it's like coming to eat them. And Greg's like, wow, this is amazing.
This is amazing, huh? I love it.
He has some of the best lines.
He really does.
I wrote down some of his.
Ain't that just the way?
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Where is that frog of mine? Where,
ain't that just the way? I mean, talking about Kurt Vonnegut from our last episode together, it's like So It Goes. It's like on par with So It Goes for me. I'm like, ain't that just the way? It's so philosophical of him.
Yeah. And it also, it makes you feel like, what time is this?
Yeah.
Like, is this early American?
It displaces you.
Right.
Because the costumes and some of the speech patterns, because Wirt will also say things like, they're very poetic and sort of this like high language. And you're like, what ear is this? But then they'll talk in a really modern way where they're like, you brought me children. He's like, children? He's like, I'm like in high school.
Yeah.
And you're like, right. Oh, okay. Are you a modern kid? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, the first episode is called The Old Grist Mill.
The Old Grist Mill. Yeah.
And we find the brothers walking in the woods. Greg has a frog, who I believe is also the same frog that is singing in the beginning of this episode.
Yes.
We see a frog at a piano singing over the garden wall.
The frog is big he's in every episode.
Yeah.
Greg is always trying to name him.
He has a couple of different names throughout
He appears to be a talking or singing frog.
He also, depending on what's going on, he changes. Mm. Like in the episode where there's other frogs, he's bipedal and a little bit bigger.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then most of the time he's just like a fat, large frog.
Right.
He also exists in the real world.
Yes.
He's what they hear when they go over the wall.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They're escaping, but they're also following the noise of a frog.
Yeah.
Because when they get over there, Greg is like, you didn't tell me this was a frog hunt. And he finds him, and then all the events happen. So the frog is sort of integral to the story, I think.
Yeah.
And frogs are such a big symbol of fairy tales.
Mm-hmm, yeah, exactly.
The frog, like the metamorphosis, the change into a prince, and all these like fairy tales that revolve around frogs.
Right. Did you notice that Wirt and Greg, their noses reflect the general shape of their heads? Wirt has a sort of a triangle nose, which reflects this sort of dunce cap thing.
Yeah.
And at one point he's put in the dunce when
box.
He's in the school
episode.
Yeah,
and his little hat is sticking out. There's like a real shape language to the characters. Yeah.
It's got
they also look like Raggedy Ann.
It's got
and
that
Andy
minimalism
doll.
That is now often called CalArts style.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, big eyes. Mm-hmm. But the backgrounds are very like...
They look like canvas paintings.
Yeah, they really do.
You can actually... I don't know if it's actual canvas painting backgrounds. Like, they used to paint the backgrounds of Disney movies, like Bambi. You see this a lot. And a lot of it reminds me of Bambi, actually. Like, the artwork of Bambi. It looks like you can see the brush strokes on some of the backgrounds.
Over the last year, I've gotten more into Disney stuff, and I saw a lot more Disney when I watched it. Like, there's a lot of when Snow White runs into the woods and she sees, like, the scary woods. Mm-hmm. There's also, there's a couple clear references to Disney animated stuff, which we'll get to when we get there.
Mm.
We see in the first episode the first appearance of something that appears often, which is a black turtle.
Mm, yes.
And the black turtles, which there are a couple of breeds of black turtle that exist in the world.
Okay.
Which I don't think have any connection to the black turtles of this world.
Mm. They look like they're not really animals. Like, they're just shaped like a turtle, sort of.
They're so densely black.
Yeah.
Greg has candy on him, and he puts a blue piece of candy on the turtle.
Mm-hmm.
And that later shows up. Because the animal that's chasing them is actually choking on the turtle.
Mm-hmm. The turtles appear to be made of the Edelwood oil.
Yes.
So, okay.
And we meet characters later on that eat the turtles.
The turtles are around. We're here to burgle your turts. This is a fantastic line that Greg says. But, so, okay. They're in the woods. The woods seem to be haunted or terrorized by this beast.
Yes.
The beast. And we also meet the woodsman, who we haven't talked about at all.
Which...
It's like the first character we meet.
Which is, Wizard of Oz, right?
Yeah.
Like that's such a... The woodsman.
The woodsman.
Such a...
He's wearing a top hat and like a big black coat, and he's got like a bundle of sticks on his back, and he's chopping down wood.
Brilliantly by Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd is the woodsman.
Being Christopher Lloyd-y all over really the place. Is. Just
yeah.
Muddy.
Give that frog a proper name.
Yeah, he's love so it. Great. And
he says he came upon the homestead. It was abandoned.
Which is interesting.
It's where Beatrice's family lived.
Is it?
Yes. Yes. So in the first opening shots, you just see like images.
Oh, that, right. That reflect things that we're going to see.
That we're going to see.
At and the very, very beginning.
At the very beginning, before anything starts, uh-huh. while the frog is singing. It's Beatrice is in the first, very, very first shot. It's Beatrice and the dog. The
I dog thought that was.
That we see. That is like a beast
I
thing.
Thought that little girl was the woodsman's daughter.
The woodsman's daughter is in the very last shot of those shots.
Ah.
Yeah, so she is also there. But Beatrice is in the first one. And the reason you know is because at the end, right. they actually show the old gristmill. Then they show Beatrice's family.
Oh, they're I've all never inside, picked up on that.
And the dog that yeah. was like hanging around the gristmill yeah. is in there with them. So it's their dog.
Oh, shit.
And that's why Beatrice is there. She's like hanging outside her house.
Wow. You know what's interesting? Even though it's sort of in the end, it kind of does a little like Wizard of Oz-y thing.
Like, was this all a dream?
Right. But it seems like the other characters living in that world are there. They're not
yes.
just delusions of the boys.
They exist.
They exist mm-hmm. in some way.
Yeah. It is. Okay. So they're in the unknown, and they refer to it as the unknown
yes.
in the world of the miniseries. So the place that they're in is the unknown. It seems to be this limbo realm between
yeah.
life and death, between sleep and awake. It's like
yeah.
this dreamlike state. Or I feel like they just drift from one story to the other. Like you see
yes.
them going down a path at the end of a lot of the episodes, and then in the next episode, they're already in the middle of something.
Right.
So
right.
I kind of feel like it's like a dream where they wake up in the middle of something.
There's one episode that ends with like just a close up of like a leaf blowing in the
mm-hmm.
wind and then getting caught in a fence.
Yeah.
And it's super, you know, moody.
Mm-hmm. It's ominous, that one, I think.
Right, because
yeah.
the fact that it's stuck.
Mm-hmm. And then some music, like some strings playing, you're like, oh, what's going to happen?
Well, even like the music at the end credits of every episode is mm-hmm. like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah,
like
haunted house music.
There's something sinister
yeah.
always around.
Well,
the
all
corner.
The title cards have a skull over them.
Right.
And then when in the second to last episode, that same skull and bones is
yeah.
on the tombstone that Wirt is hiding behind.
Which is also the tombstone of a character we've seen earlier. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't notice that.
That the tombstone says Quincy Endicott.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Okay.
Yeah, there's so much to find.
There's a
to
lot
find.
There.
So, yeah, so Christopher Lloyd, the woodsman.
The woodsman.
Right. And he turns the mill. Basically, he chops down
Edelwood trees.
Edelwood trees. And he
like
gets
presses
the sap from
the
them.
Wood.
Right.
And this black oil comes out of it, and he harvests the oil to keep this lantern lit.
Because he has to keep it lit.
And we come to find that the beast has given him this task because the beast turned his daughter into an Edelwood tree, and her
right.
soul, he's told the woodsman that her soul is in the lantern, and if he doesn't keep it lit, then
right.
she'll die.
But
he'll never see her again.
We don't know that till much later.
We don't know that till much, much later. We just know that the woodsman is doing
right.
this. It's his task. It's his burden to
right.
bear, he says. He has to keep the lantern lit.
What's important to mention is the woodsman is the first in what starts a very important theme in the show, which is trusting, being wrong about where the danger is.
Mm-hmm.
They often trust characters that end up screwing them over.
Yes.
And they often are afraid of characters that are their friends.
Right.
They're afraid of the woodsman.
Right.
Like, Wirt really thinks, like, the woodsman is, like, going to kill them.
Right.
And in the end, woodsman is looking out for them more than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in the show, there are many other people that are, they trust mm-hmm. and end up being villainous.
Right.
So it's
Lorna.
Really, yes.
Beatrice.
So it's really interesting if you think about, like, the, like Little Red Riding Hood and the
mm-hmm.
idea of trust and who you should trust and you shouldn't trust.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a big part of it. And
mm-hmm.
also maybe a big part of the idea of like growing up and stuff. Like,
mm-hmm.
And also Wirt seems to be the one who has the most fear.
Yeah.
Wirt's instincts are often wrong, but
mm-hmm.
Greg's instincts are often right.
Mm-hmm. But Wirt, we find, is really good under pressure.
Yes.
He comes up with schemes and plans that are fantastic
yes.
and they work out really well.
Yes. Because he just lacks confidence, mm-hmm. like a boy his age might.
Right. But when he's pressed, he comes up with some good stuff.
Right. And then also, again, the theme of trusting what you shouldn't or vice versa. Mm-hmm. They think this dog is the beast that they've heard of. It's not. The beast is something else.
It is a big scary dog, right? Though.
But it's not trying to kill them. It's choking. Mm-hmm. Right? And you just told me it's Beatrice's dog. Mm-hmm. So
it's a very cute dog once it gets rid of the black turtle inside of it.
Yeah, doesn't Greg have some cute line like, we're best friends now? So again, another example of they think this thing is trying to kill them, but it is in pain mm-hmm. and it wants their help. Which I think is so fascinating, just the idea of like behind any one of these little things is something very, very dark. You know, and the show does get dark, not in a sort of shocking violent way, but in a very melancholy way. There are depressing things in the show. Some of the plights of the people they meet are very sad. By the way, did you know, this is just a little thing, did you notice that in the woodman's house or Beatrice's house, there are no banisters?
Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, when he goes up the stairs, there isn't. Yeah.
And I wondered if he used that wood for something.
Oh, yeah.
Or what? Just because I was really looking around this viewing for...
Wait, but there's none. I think there's none in Lorna's house either.
Yeah, that's true. It could be.
It might just be like a...
But Lorna's house seems more like a shack where the woodman, where the woodsman is, seems a little bit more fancy.
Yeah, it's like deliberately displacing in terms of like what era they're in, because when you go to the schoolhouse, it looks like it could be like the 1800s or even the early 1900s. And then where Lorna lives, it's like she's like a peasant in like a 1700s fairy tale or like 1600s. Right. You know, it's like you don't know where she is. She looks like a pilgrim or something.
Right. It's just the past.
It's the past. Right. Like a dreamlike past.
Right. Exactly. And like a dream, they accept it and don't think about how weird it is that where they are and the things they're going through. So we have the first rock fact.
Yeah, that's a rock fact.
Right, which is always a lie.
It's a lie. It's not true.
So rock fact is a lie. And it's Greg has this little rock with a face painted on it that he will bring out and be like, that's a rock fact.
He'll say something ridiculous and it'll be like, that's a rock fact. And, and then this is a close up on the rock.
Yeah.
Oh, did we talk about Elijah Wood?
No, let's talk about him.
Elijah Wood is the voice of Wirt.
And I can't help but feel like there's some Frodo Baggins going on here. I mean, just...
He's on a journey. He's perpetually on a journey, Elijah Wood.
He is. Aren't we all? We're all Elijah Wood in our hearts.
I wish.
Or I should say, this episode ends with the woodsman telling Wirt, you're the older one, so you're in charge, mm-hmm. and you have to take responsibility. So it really puts, I think, a pressure on Wirt. But also, maybe I'm dumb. This was the first time I noticed that they're stepbrothers.
Yeah.
I did not put that together the first two times I saw it.
It's in his song that he sings at the end.
Oh, right.
He's we're related because my mom married his dad. Right. And
in the last episode, when he's mad at Greg, he says, you're stupid dad. Mm-hmm. So you see there's like a weird animosity there, which I did not.
Which is funny because, again, it's like this recurring trope of a fairy tale, the evil stepmother, and this one we have like the adorable stepbrother.
He's so adorable,
but like it's like step children, step parents. That's like also a big thing in fairy tales, and that's another thing that comes from lore. Apparently, the like where does step come from
the
in
actual term
the relationship?
Step?
Yeah, like where does that come from? And it's actually related to death. It's related to. In, you know, before divorces, you had to have died. Like someone would have to have died. Uh-huh. And the root step comes from, it's like death mother, death father. It's like, it's a really cool etymology. Whoa. Well, cool. I mean, it's like a really sad etymology about.
Although they never use the term. He never says step brother.
He never does?
I don't believe
so. I thought he did once.
He describes.
Or like half brother. Or some, no, I don't think he says half brother. He might say step at some point.
Really? I think he might.
But in any event, they are step siblings.
Right.
So I find.
Which is interesting only that I didn't notice it. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. Clearly, it means nothing to Greg. Greg has total love and devotion.
He's a full brother. Brother o' mine, he calls
him.
Yeah.
That's another thing that makes you, the audience, feel displaced, because somehow Greg talks in this weird way.
It's a very weird way. Like a little kid should not talk.
Like he gets his exclamation is like, "Oh, beans!
Oh, beans! Is that frog o' mine?"
I love that he's so unaware of like what's going on. Like they'll be in some danger, and Greg will just be having fun. But also, it might be that Greg is the most aware because he realizes that where they are, he could be like the lucid dreamer who like isn't afraid of what's around them.
Anything, because he knows it's all a dream. Right. Yeah. That's true. Oh, can we talk about Beatrice's name?
Yes, please.
So they meet Beatrice. She's the first. They meet her before the woodsman, actually, because she's like, gotta go when the woodsman shows up.
We only meet her for a second in the first episode, and then she comes back.
Yeah. So she is like, you guys are lost. I'm going to lead you to Adelaide, the good woman of the pasture. Mm-hmm. And so she's sort of acting as their guide through the unknown. And so I'm like, Beatrice, where have I heard this name before? In Dante's Divine Comedy, Virgil is his guide through hell, but Beatrice is his guide through, I believe also purgatory, but I know for sure she's the guide through heaven.
Interesting.
And so it's like,
and she's their guide.
Afterlife guide. So it is, it's like obviously very deliberate. Yeah. They're doing this.
Yeah,
but also she's the guide in heaven. And it's a nice like misdirect because Beatrice is not guiding them to the correct place in the unknown.
We find out that she is guiding them to a witch.
Right.
Because who wants she was them. Not always right. a bluebird. She threw a rock at a bluebird.
Like, what a dick.
And was hurt her family, who they are many, and they have red hair. So I'm going to call them Irish. I'm just going to do it. You know how they breed those Irish. She was told by this witch that if she brings her boys, two little boys to be her servants, that she'll. So she's not evil Beatrice, but she's trying to save her family.
Right. Like, she's definitely out for herself. She doesn't care about them, in the beginning at least.
Let's say now what the situation is, which is what we have in this is like a dream, but it's also kind of a Jacob's Ladder situation.
Where they're about to die and they're having this illusion.
In their contemporary time, which 70s, 80s, who knows?
We don't know.
It's the 20th century. They are on Halloween night. They are, we get there in the last episode, or the second to last episode. They end up in a cemetery, which is called the Garden.
Uh-huh.
And then they go over the garden wall.
To escape the police.
Yeah. But the cops are not actually.
They're hysterical. They're like, please don't climb over that wall. It's dangerous.
And hey, you. Just kidding.
Hey, you two robbers. You're under arrest. Happy Halloween.
When they go over the wall, I forget what exactly happens, but they fall into...
They fall down and they don't realize they're on train tracks.
Right.
And Greg is like, it's a frog hunt, and like finds a frog.
Yeah.
And then the train comes and then we don't see what happens. But then the next shot, it's like it cuts to black.
Yeah.
And then we just see them rolling down a hill.
Right.
And then they hit water.
And they're
and
in
then
the
they're
water.
Just under the water.
Their real bodies are in the water in the dying. Water.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a theme later on that for the beast to actually get you, you have to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't give up, you can
it's
win.
It's very much like the, what is it? Like the pit of, not the pit of despair, but it's like the swamp of despair or something in the Neverending Story.
Yeah.
Where like if you, the sadness. If you give in to the sadness, you sink.
Right. So yeah, like, and so it's basically like, will these boys fight for their lives?
Right. Greg, the little beacon of optimism.
Yeah. He saves them both, really. Mm-hmm. So chapter 2, episode 2.
Hard times at the Huskin Bee.
Yeah. This is such an autumnal episode
because
it's all pumpkins.
Turkeys.
It's a harvest. Mm-hmm. It's a harvest
it's
episode.
A harvest. It is a harvest. Yeah.
What a glorious harvest.
This horrible voice of Enoch.
I know.
Who's Chris Isaacs.
Right.
Of Wicked Games fame.
But he's doing a Bing Crosby impression.
It sounds like Bing Crosby. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Who is Bing Crosby.
Does the voice of Sleepy Hollow.
Right. He's the narrator of Ichabod in The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad.
Every single... And he does the Headless Horseman. narration. Well, also.
That animated feature, like, it's all narration, but then he also speaks for the characters, so you don't hear any other voices but him.
Right. So every single time we ever mention Tarrytown in this household, Phil goes into a Bing Crosby impression. Yeah. He's like, "Up in Tarrytown." That's how he does it in The Headless Horseman. Oh,
yeah. God. So yeah, it's Chris Isaac doing
a Bing Crosby.
Doing a Bing Crosby.
But I feel like his voice must be like modulated or something. Like, there's no way it's that deep, or like he can make it that deep, because it sounds nuts.
Right. But again, it feels like old timey.
Yes.
And
it almost looks like it's in sepia tone.
Yes. It's all like,
which is another kind of like Wizard of Ozzy thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So they come upon this village.
Well, first they come upon Beatrice again. She's stuck in something.
Stuck in a bush.
And Greg gets her out, which now I realize she wasn't. It was a trick.
It was a trap. Yeah.
God damn it.
I know, Beatrice.
So she's going to bring them to Adelaide of the Pasture, the good woman of the woods.
They come upon Pottsfield.
Yeah.
That's the name of the
Which is
town.
Like Potter's Field. Which is where you would bury the anonymous and poor.
Mm-hmm.
So Pottsfield. Mm-hmm. And again, wrong instincts. Greg is like, Wirt is like, I want to go to Pottsfield.
Yeah, and Greg's like, well, I don't
know. Yeah.
So they get there. He goes into one of the things that makes me laugh hysterically every time is they open the door and there's just a turkey inside. He's like, oh, sorry.
Yeah. That's so weird.
It's so strange. So it's like a big barn. They hear people having a party.
Yeah.
They go. It's all these pumpkin people.
Yeah.
And then one of them mentions, like, oh, you didn't even put on your costume. And he's like, oh, you're all wearing costumes. He's like, well, yeah, pumpkins don't get up and move, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Everyone's just wearing a costume. It's fine.
Right. And Beatrice feels like this is a problem. She wants to leave immediately.
This is weird. Let's get the hell out of here. And then one of them says very eerily, like, aren't you a little early? Like, you don't look like you're ready to join us yet.
Right, maybe the first clue that they're dying.
Yes.
Enoch is, I guess, their leader.
He's giant.
Yeah.
He's this big, giant, like, pumpkin floating thing. It looks like he's a pumpkin attached to, like, a circus tent or something.
Well, it's that game, like, from
Midsummer.
Oh,
Maypole.
Yeah,
around. He looks like that.
Yeah. And, so they get in trouble somehow, and they're sentenced to a few hours of manual labor.
That's it. They're trespassing. They, like, stepped on some pumpkins by accident.
Yes.
And they're digging holes. They're, like, sentenced to do some harvest stuff.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they're digging holes, and they become convinced that they're digging their own graves.
Which I don't believe they are.
No, they are not. They're digging out other people from their graves, it turns out. Because
under the pumpkins...
they're all skeletons!
Yeah.
This is great, great Halloween imagery.
Yeah.
And they pop on the pumpkins.
But again, they're not really... they're not a threat to them.
They're not.
They just think that they are.
Right. They're fine.
Yeah.
And he's like, you sure you don't want to join us? Like, we'd love to have you.
Right.
And he's like, everybody does eventually.
Ooh.
Which is like, if they decided to stay in Pottsfield,
would they have died?
They would have died, right?
Right. I guess so.
Yeah.
As a distraction.
Because he's always going back and forth. Wirt is always like, maybe I will stay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you're going to die.
Yeah, exactly. There's an homage here because Beatrice, to distract the townspeople, she as a bluebird, flies into a skeleton and like makes the skeleton dance.
Mm.
And I think that's a direct reference to the 1929 Silly Symphony Skeleton Dance, the Disney animated short, which you've probably seen images of at some point. It's a black and white cartoon, and it is just a graveyard, and the skeletons come out and they dance.
It's a popular Halloween season gif.
Yeah, and it's... to me, I was like, it immediately brought me there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, the Bing Crosby, Sleepy Hollow thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we get into episode 3, Schooltown Follies.
Yeah.
Which is, my two favorite songs come from this episode.
Okay. Oh.
So, Schooltown Follies, we have, we actually have three songs in this episode. Adelaide's Parade.
That's right.
Which comes back later.
Mm-hmm. It opens with Adelaide's Parade.
Yeah.
They're walking. Greg is singing a little song about how they're going to go see Adelaide.
Yeah.
He's always dancing with his frog, which I love.
Yeah.
And then they come upon this schoolhouse. It's in the middle of the woods.
Right. And there are animals in it.
And little animals with clothes. That raccoon is the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
The raccoon is so cute.
And maybe the best game? Two old cats. No, that cat is too old.
I know. And the school teacher, Miss Langtry, she's an actual, she's a singer named Janet Klein.
Okay.
But if you look at her videos, they're all in black and white. And she kind of, she has not a real old-timey voice, but that sort of continental accent you'd see in old movies.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like,
it's like that affect to the voice. Yeah, kind of like
Ginger Rogers a little bit.
Okay.
And she sings my favorite song, Langtry's Lament.
Oh my God. A is for the apple.
Yeah, love which is
that. Like, right, she goes through the whole alphabet.
Right.
That how Jimmy Brown did her wrong.
Yeah. All that Jimmy B. Her boyfriend, Jimmy Brown.
Thomas Lennon.
Yes.
Love it.
But it was only been 3 days.
That's right. He's only been gone for three days. I love Beatrice. Like, lady, you got a lot of baggage.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't play the whole song in the episode, but you can find it.
They keep cutting back, and then she's like laying on the floor. And why? Like, she's totally exhausted from singing this song.
It's so good. It's so good. yeah, and we see, by the way, we see another black turtle here. It sort of crawls, the raccoon and Greg are like sitting on a log. As they're like cutting school, and then a black turtle walks by, and I think the raccoon picks it up and throws it.
Throws it, yeah.
Love it. In some ways, it seems like the black turtles are following the boys.
In some ways, yeah. Or the whole unknown is just infested with them.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. I actually never thought of it that way, that they were following them, but yeah. I just saw it as like an infestation.
Right. We find out that there is a loose gorilla.
Yes.
Who's terrorizing their little town.
Mm-hmm.
At lunchtime, my second favorite song, Greg sings Potatoes and Molasses.
This is maybe my first favorite,
Potatoes
I think.
Potatoes and Molasses.
I love it.
If you can't see, put on your glasses. And this is, some people think this is a sort of riff on the song Animal Crackers in My Soup from the, sung by Shirley Temple in the 1935 film Curly Top. And she even has an outfit like his outfit.
Like Greg's outfit.
And it's just cute.
It's so cute. Greg, and the animals are all wearing little clothes. They're all sitting there waiting. The little pig is waiting for his molasses. Yeah.
And it's just perfect Greg. Like, he's making a bad situation better.
Mm-hmm.
He's making up a song.
Mm-hmm.
Just I like when he goes up to the piano and he just starts randomly hitting it. And he's like, play something like this. It's like, dar, 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 dar. And then she starts actually playing a melody. And she's like this. And he's like, kind of.
I guess. Like, he's disappointed.
Yeah. So then he sings Potatoes and Molasses.
They, like, spend molasses the night there.
Yes, they do.
So they've been there for a few days,
yeah,
it seems.
I would say the molasses reminds me again of the oil and the turtles, like the sort of black sludge. Mm-hmm. We meet the school teacher's father who like funds the school.
Right.
And he, when we first see him, again, he's someone that we think is a threat. We first see him, he's big, scary guy.
Yeah.
But then we see him later on, he takes off his coat, he's skinny little guy.
He's so skinny.
And he's very vulnerable and scared.
He like curls up under his coat.
Yeah.
Also, I'm like, why did he go sleep out in the woods? You have this whole house of beds inside, like the dorms where all the kids, all the animals sleep.
He's mad when they're all dancing around to Potatoes and Molasses, and he sends them to bed, and they're all like crying, going,
I know,
to
they're
bed.
Like so cute. They're all in like nightshirts.
Yeah.
Going to sleep in this little, like, looks like an orphanage or something. It's so cute. He's like, I thought we were doing important work here, teaching animals to count and spell.
One of my favorite lines. Important work.
And he has to sell. Now he's like, I put all my life savings into this school, and now I have to sell all the instruments they were playing to keep it going. And then, you know, Greg, oh God, he's like, let's rob this guy. And Wirt's like, what? But they put on a benefit concert for this school.
Yes. But also, there's a theme in this episode, which is Beatrice tells Greg the world is a bad place. And Greg is like, we have to make the world a good place. Mm-hmm. And I want to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of why he does what he does in the episode with Potatoes and Molasses. He's like, he makes it his little life's mission to make things better.
But he does have these little hardened moments where you're like, Greg, like, this is one of them where he's like, let's rob that guy, but he's doing it for a good purpose.
Right, right.
Or when he gets the coins and he throws them in the fountain, he's like, I got no sense at all. And you're what, Greg? Yeah. What are you talking about, you little cutie?
Well, we learn at the end that he has this great guilt for stealing the rock.
That's right.
But he even says, like, I'm a stealer. Which no one gives a shit about the rock, you know what I mean?
Know.
But like, he feels guilt over it, which is maybe why he makes the rock lie.
Oh, that little, the like childhood psychology of I did a bad thing, so now The Rock never tells the truth. Yeah. That's so funny. Please don't call me old lady.
Oh, I love that. Sure thing, young man. yeah, like he gets The Rock from old lady Daniels' yard.
I love it.
Thanks, old lady Daniels. Please don't call me old lady. Okay, young man. Yeah, because it's Halloween. This is in the episode where you see them in their own time. And he's like, old lady Daniels, let me do some yard work for her for some candy. And where it's like, you could have just got candy for free. And he's like, old lady Daniels says nothing's for free. Chapter 4.
Oh, this is one of my favorite ones.
This is one of my least favorite ones.
Really?
Songs of the Dark Lantern.
Yeah.
This one reminded me of Star Wars in that it's the trope of like young men going to a bar and children going to an adult space.
Adult space. Scary. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, their innocence and they're entering this space with all these like potentially hardened people. So this one really, really starts in media res because
It's raining.
They're on a fast moving cart being pulled by a horse. The horse is running. It's like, the beast is upon us. That's what they keep hearing.
They're
hiding under a bale of hay.
Right.
Is there a beast out there? And he's like, no, I don't see anything. And then they get out and they're at this inn, this tavern.
Yeah.
And it's all about archetypes in stories, archetypes in fairy tales, are the characters that you meet. And they enter. And the tavern keeper's like, well, who are you? And she's like this funny kind of she kind of sounds like Betty Boop, but she kind of looks like Betty Boop.
There's the tailor.
There's the butcher.
Right.
I'm the highwayman. Just the highwayman.
It also made me think about like the idea of like when you become an adult, you become the thing you do. You become your job.
Okay.
And so they're all like their jobs. Mm-hmm. They're all like.
There's a toy maker.
Yes.
Who looks a lot like Geppetto and making toys of the people at the bar. In the tavern. And it's also in one of the opening shots.
Yeah.
Wooden toys. And it's like the highwayman and all the characters we meet in the tavern. Yeah. And then when I was rewatching it, because I was like, are they just playthings? Is that not a real place? But then I realized, oh, the toy maker's there. He's just making them.
Yeah.
And then in the last set of images, the very last set of images in the show, he's now added Greg and Wirt to that little cast of wooden characters. So he's making all the characters you meet there, the master and the apprentice, it's like a little boy on a leash, it's weird. The highwayman sings a song
who does this like very jazzy kind
of
song.
And
he does this interesting like dance. The animation's interesting where like
it becomes like a fisheye almost.
He like as he's like gyrating in front of the camera,
and that's
an homage to something. I'm sure
They're talking about the unknown. They're talking about their roles there. They all know the beast, and Wirt is trying to find his place among the characters.
They tell Beatrice to leave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's a bluebird.
Which also reminded me of like C-3PO being asked to
leave. Oh, yeah. Get out. Bluebirds are unlucky. And she's like, lady, I'm real lucky and I hope you die.
Bluebirds are lucky.
Something crazy.
Well, I don't want good luck either.
Mm. And they're like, are you the young lover? Like, what's your role?
Yeah.
We're going to see Adelaide. Oh, okay. It's about a girl. You're the young lover.
Right.
This is maybe my favorite song.
Really?
It's just the line, there's work for all when little boys get married. It makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah. Who sings that?
The toy maker sings it. He's got that, it's like a weird lilting. It's like, write a lovely letter. And it's like this weird wavering voice that's also very like old timey.
Yeah.
And he's saying like, the tailor will make your suit. You have to have cake. There's work for all when little boys get married.
Yeah.
And then Wirt explains he's on a journey and they're like, oh, you're the pilgrim.
Right. Which he likes that.
Yeah.
He likes that identity of the pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
We also meet in this episode Fred the Horse, which is voiced by comedian Fred Stoller.
Oh my God.
Who's a great character.
So good.
A talking horse.
He just sounds like New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing. This series, like, they're always straddling the line between feeling like sort of old-fashioned folklore and having very contemporary kind of joking dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we didn't say in the last episode, the gorilla is actually not a scary gorilla. It is Jimmy B, the Langtree's, the school teacher's boyfriend who went away. He joined the circus to get money to buy her a ring, but he got stuck in the gorilla costume. So they think that, so again, it's like the dog. They think it's a threat and it's not.
Right. And the gorilla keeps showing up in the scenes, but getting like knocked out by other characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And then finally he terrorizes the fundraiser at the end, but then they find out it's him.
Right.
Well, Beatrice, upon being kicked out of the tavern, hears, oh yeah, we hear this deep singing voice in the forest every so often. Right. And we think it's the woodsman chopping away because the woodsman is there.
Right.
So she follows the voice. At the same time, the Wirt and Greg are being told that whoever bears the dark lantern is the beast.
Right. So they think the woodman must be the
woodsman
beast.
Woodsman must be the beast. And so then they hear like a scream. They run out to find Beatrice. She looks like she's been knocked out by the woodsman. The woodsman is next to her and they like attack him and they get away with her and they ride away on Fred the horse. But then she explains, oh no, she got disoriented and she actually just like flew into a tree. So he didn't do anything to her. And then I think at the end of that episode, we actually see the beast for the first time.
Talking to the woodsman.
Right. It's not him, but I think it's deliberately supposed to sound like James Earl Jones.
Oh, interesting. I didn't get that. He does have a weird otherworldly kind of voice.
It's extremely deep.
And he's the one doing the singing.
He's doing sort of the always singing. Yeah.
And
like an opera
say,
type voice.
He's like this black silhouette with glowing eyes. You can see like horns
or
kind of
branches
like antlers.
Or whatever. Yeah. So yeah.
But you can't make out any details on his body.
Yeah, he's all black, white eyes, very spooky.
There's one shot in one episode where like a lantern is sort of they open a lantern by him,
and you can see his body.
Right. Which in the episode is very very short, but
you got to pause it.
People have found it online, and it's he just kind of looks like wood
with all faces.
And like. Knots and holes.
Knots and like either holes that look like faces or they are faces. It's very spooky and scary.
So, chapter 5, Mad Love.
This is my least favorite one.
Really?
Yeah.
I really like this one because it actually feels like real folklore. The idea of two rich people that make houses so big that they don't realize that they are connected.
I felt like I've heard this story before. Right.
It also reminded me of Poe. I've been reading a lot of Poe lately, so maybe that's what it is. But the idea of like he's in love with a ghost reminded me a lot of Edgar Allan Poe. So this is, this is again in media res because they're like just
already in the house
with Quincy Endicott, voiced by John Cleese.
Fantastic.
One of the only non-American anythings really in the whole show. And he's fabulously wealthy. He's just
crazy.
He's
a tea company.
Wealthy. Yes.
He's like, he tried my tea. He's like, I've never touched the stuff. Like, he won't drink his own tea.
They've convinced him that they're his nephews. So he'll like.
Oh my God. One of my favorite lines is, he's like, what's wrong, Unky Endicott? He's like, you know me well, nephew. So he just walked into this guy's house.
So great. Oh, he's so great in it.
And, he's like, we're going to do it, but mostly because I want to see a ghost.
Yeah.
And Greg's leading him on this ghost chase through the house.
Yeah.
While they're trying to rob him, essentially.
Yeah, Fred the horse is so great in this.
He's like, I want to steal.
Yeah, it's certainly not trying to get your money.
So I guess they go to this guy's house to fleece him.
Right, because they need 2 cents.
To take the ferry
which
to
is
go to
River
Adelaide.
You need two cents
on your eyes.
Right, you need the
That's
2 cents,
right.
to, which is to die or to go to hell. Where's the River Styx take you?
The River Styx takes you to Hades.
Okay.
You have to pay Charon the ferryman.
Yeah.
To take you there. So that's why the dead used to be buried with coins on their eyes.
Right. So it's very specific. They're like, we need 2 cents from this guy.
Right.
To get the ferry to Adelaide.
Which I guess if Adelaide captured them, they would have died there as well. Yeah, yeah.
And it's another indication that they're in some sort of afterlife or some sort of in-between sort of liminal space. Endicott's mansion is a little bit like Winchester Mansion that he just keeps building it and building it and building
it. Until they eventually connect.
Yeah.
With Marguerite Gray, who is the
Phoebe
Newworth, but she's doing a
French
accent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're connected. So she's the owner of the rival tea company.
But somehow they've built their mansion so large that they connect. And he thinks that he's seen this beautiful ghost that he's fallen in love with. But he also, and this reminded me of Edgar Allan Poe, he wonders that if it's not a ghost, he's just crazy. And he's worried about going crazy.
Right.
Which is very Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg is like, let's go find the ghost. Mm-hmm.
And while they're distracted doing that, Wirt and Beatrice are like shaking down everything, breaking all of his stuff, trying to find money.
And this is the first time.
And they discover what the truth of the house is.
Yes.
They're the ones who discover that the houses are connected.
And Wirt is the one who puts together probably what happened. He's very clever in this episode. This is also the first time that Beatrice admits that she was a human.
Right. He's like, did I know that? I feel like I didn't know that. Which is funny because he's the audience in that moment. Right, we're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Right, because she says, like, check the pockets or maybe there's some money sewn into the coats. She's like, I used to do it. And he's like, what, do you have, like, a little bird jacket or something? That's so cute. Yeah. And she's like, no, when I was a human. He's like, wait, what?
Did I know that? Yeah. I mean, I guess. See, I like it because I think John Cleese is really funny in it. I think Fred the Horse is really funny in it.
They both are, yeah.
It's off the beaten path. But, you know, every episode is kind of its own thing.
Yeah, it's its own thing. They do receive 2 cents.
Yes.
For helping them discover the truth and also uniting them in love.
Yes.
But then Greg throws it away in a fountain.
Which could also symbolize
he's not ready giving to, in die. To die. He's death. Not giving up. Right. Yeah.
But like you said, he says, like, I have no sense at all.
Yeah.
And they're like, why did you do that? So the next episode, episode 6, which is, they call it chapter 6, is Lullaby in Frogland. Mm-hmm.
So they're on the ferry already. We meet them on the ferry.
But it's a very like riverboat kind of like, and it's all these bipedal frogs wearing clothing, and there's a frog band.
Now this one is weird because it's referenced again in the opening shots with 2 little boys in like sort of like sailor costumes, it looks like, playing on a river or a stream, and they have a ferry.
They have a toy of the ferry. Yeah. Those opening shots, I've never quite
connected them or like figured out what it's supposed to mean. Yeah.
Also, the title card of every episode, there's like almost like a passion thing around the border of like, and but so you kind of like, is each one of those a different episode, but not exactly.
Yeah.
I've never quite figured out what that means.
So it's all these frogs, they're traveling on the ferry.
Yeah.
They're going to hibernate, I guess.
Yeah.
They're all wearing clothes.
Yeah. They're getting close to Adelaide. Mm-hmm. And Beatrice, I guess, is beginning to like them.
Yeah, she's starting to feel guilty.
Because she kind of doesn't want to go anymore. Mm-hmm. She's feeling like she's hiding something and she's sad and she's feeling guilty. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to do this. Mm-hmm. We have a reprise of the Adelaide Parade.
Mm-hmm. And now Wirt seems to be getting more optimistic also. He seems more lighthearted. He's like, things are finally working out. We're going to get to Adelaide. We're going to get home.
Greg has changed the frog's name. For a while, the frog was named Wirt.
Mm-hmm. It was Kitty.
Yes.
It was Wirt.
And now it's George Washington.
Okay.
Which somehow I feels into like there's something colonial about the whole situation there.
Yeah, I think of like the first Thanksgiving. I think of these images.
The song Over the Garden Wall is again sung.
Mm.
George Washington, the frog, he's bipedal, which he's really not in any other episode. Mm-hmm. You have little tadpoles.
Little baby tadpoles.
Which you hear like baby cooing. This is one of, I love it all, but this is one of my least favorites.
I think it's worth it for the end of this episode.
Yes. What happens in the end?
So they take the ferry. I'm like, how did they get on the ferry without the 2 cents? It's
whatever.
They say, oh, we just snuck on. The frog cop tries to catch them.
Yeah.
They become part of the band. The frog, George Washington, sings. They're like all amazed that he can sing. Yeah. And they're so good that they're not arrested and they're allowed to stay on. Yeah.
Frog,
yeah.
Who can sing.
Who can sing when no one's looking.
Right.
I also thought that. Yeah. So, which is like an old hallmark of animation. Right. So it's like all these references. But
it ends with Beatrice going to Adelaide.
Leaving. Yeah. Yes. So they're camping out for the night. Again, another night spent in this place.
Yeah.
The frogs are all in this like muddy swamp, it looks like, to hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're supposed to be sleeping, Beatrice takes off. And so Wirt and Greg follow her. The frog is getting a record contract while they're leaving. It's so funny.
Adelaide, by the way, is also voiced
John Cleese, by John right? Cleese. Yeah. So Adelaide is in her bed in this like very cute cottage, actually. It's a lot of yarn and knitting. And
it reminded me a lot of like the grandmother from Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, yeah.
She seems like a sweet old lady.
Yeah. She's like, close the flue. Like the night air is going to get in. And Beatrice is there basically saying like,
can we change our deal?
Yeah, I don't want to
bring
anymore.
You these boys. Because what Beatrice wants is Adelaide, who is a witch, has these magical like scissors.
Those look like bird scissors.
They look like birds, yeah. Mm-hmm. But she says if you cut off your wings, it'll turn you back into a human.
Right.
So she's like, I'll give you these magical scissors if you bring me 2 little boys, which is very
Hansel
and Gretel.
Yeah, very Hansel and Gretel, 100%.
So
they come in. and
they feel betrayed. They by feel Beatrice.
They're completely betrayed. She was like, she pulls some strings and it wraps them up in strings and like captures them, which is very scary because she looks very weak, but she's able to trap them. And then Beatrice opens the window and she starts, Adelaide starts like melting and smoking.
The night air is really poisonous to her.
She goes, "Whoa, lady, you weren't kidding," which I think is so funny.
Yeah.
And then so Adelaide dies. But Wirt and Greg also get away, and it's revealed that they got away because the scissors fell near them, and Wirt grabbed them and escaped with the scissors.
Yeah, yeah.
But they leave Beatrice, and Beatrice is like, "Wait, I'm sorry."
Yeah.
And at that point, Wirt becomes hardened. He's very disillusioned. He is obviously very betrayed. He's angry. He's sort of like lost hope.
Right, right, right. Because he feels like he was wrong for trusting her or for beginning to trust her.
Right.
Even though she did have bad intentions, but her intentions were changing.
Yes. And ultimately, they were motivated by helping her family. So she's not totally bad.
Yeah.
But it was at the expense of these other two kids' lives. So not great. Not a great look for Beatrice.
So we go to chapter 7, The Ringing of the Bell.
Oh, I love this one.
Maybe my second favorite episode, or maybe it's tied with the school episode. This is, I think, one of the scariest episodes.
Very scary. Very, very scary.
We see the woodsman again. Mm-hmm. He tells the boys to never give up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first, it's, I think, the beginning of this idea of like, you giving up is what will kill you. You have to give up for the beast to get you.
To get you. Yeah. Once you give up, he can start turning you into an Edelwood tree.
So they find this little cottage. And in the cottage, there are barrels of the black turtles. And we meet this beautiful girl named Lorna, voiced by Shannon Sossaman.
Who is not British.
No.
But does a British accent.
Right.
For this role.
And then she has Auntie Whispers, which is voiced by Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Who
a big troll like?
He looks like a Miyazaki character.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah.
Huge head, huge eyes.
Huge head, big fat nose.
Right. It looks like something from like
Spirited Away. It looks the woman who runs the bathhouse.
The madam of the bathhouse. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Tim Curry suffered a stroke
prior to this. Yeah.
Yes. So his voice has a sort of hollowy thing. Like
there's like a thinness to the voice. Yeah.
Lorna, you deceived me, child.
It's so creepy. Right.
Yeah. So, of course, you think,
will no one be devoured tonight? Like, it's a lot of devouring talk. Like, and it's clear that they want you to think that Auntie Whispers, first of all, because of her creepy ass name and face, is the one doing the devouring. Right.
And she also seems to be hypnotizing Lorna with a bell.
Yes.
She rings the bell, and the bell.
The ring of the bell commands you.
Yeah. And she basically, like, kind of like a Cinderella story, she makes Lorna, like, clean the house.
Clean the house constantly. But she says, like,
keeping you busy will keep the, I forget how she puts it, but keep the whatever away.
Right.
And of course, Wirt is like, I guess, attracted to Lorna, and he helps her with her chores. Mm-hmm.
They have a song. They have a duet.
Yes.
They sing.
The frog makes his way upstairs, so Greg chases the frog, and he finds Auntie Whispers. And Auntie Whispers comes down, and she sees the boy. She's like, "What are you doing in my house? You'll be doomed if you're here."
Right.
Which we think is her threatening them.
He says, "Stay away from her. You'll be devoured." Thinking, like, I'm threatening you.
Right.
Keep away from her. I'll devour you. And then Lorna is like, come in here.
Right.
Which it's another one. She calls them her turtles.
Yes.
But we see Auntie Whispers eating the turtles.
Right.
And then they're her turtles.
Right.
She closes the door and then she becomes this horrific.
Right.
Like demon, wraith, ghost thing.
Right. You see that, in fact, Lorna was the danger.
Yeah.
Again, it's that central
theme.
Which is
funny because Greg explicitly says it. He's like, isn't that funny? We thought it was her.
I love it. See, that's what I love. I love that it's like some of the dialogue feels like contemporary commentary on the oddness of what's obviously happening.
Yeah, Greg is always, like you said, he's like the lucid dreamer. Like, he's so aware of what's happening.
Yeah. And the frog swallows the bell, so Auntie Whispers can't control Lorna, so Lorna starts chasing them.
But then Greg starts ringing the frog,
right?
And then Wirt comes up with the idea of telling whatever's possessing Lorna to leave her alone,
and he basically exorcises
her. He helps her. Yeah, he helps her. He gets rid of the demon.
Yeah.
And by the way, in the very end, when they're back in their contemporary world, mm-hmm. you see the frog still has belly the bell in
is
it.
Glowing.
Right.
So you're like, oh, okay, so this was real.
Right.
Also, when you see Lorna and Auntie Whispers in the last shot too, she's reading Tome of the Unknown. I noticed it this time around. I was like, okay.
At this point, it doesn't do much other than be like, oh, cool. Like, Auntie Whispers tells her she's Adelaide's sister.
Yes, watch out for my sister, Adelaide.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she is a witch, I guess.
A little bit. Yeah. Maybe she is a witch.
Yeah, I find this to be the sort of scariest episode.
Definitely.
Episode 8, Babes in the Wood.
Oh, I love the animation in this one.
You have this great image of a fish fishing.
Yeah.
Like a fishing boat with a giant fish in it.
That keeps coming back, too.
Yeah, with a fishing rod, mm-hmm. like the fish fishing. I don't know, just an amazing little character. Well, you know, before we move on, what do you think about like some of the casting? Like, why Tim Curry? Why Tim Curry playing a female? Why even John Cleese playing a female?
I don't know. I think maybe it's uncanny. I think it maybe adds to the overall dream like state. Like, we have adults playing children, we have men playing female characters.
Yes.
There's something a little. I'm gonna say there's something artificial about it. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't sound like a real person's voice.
Well, it's kind of like in Bob's Burgers, all the females are voiced by males, right?
Almost all of them, with the exception of Louise. Right, yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although that never feels like Linda rings so true to me.
Right.
So there's like that stuff. But I almost feel like it's like so the wolf pretending to be grandma, you know?
Right. But there's like, you think about like Christopher Lloyd, mm-hmm. and you know, Christopher Lloyd, John Cleese and Tim Curry, mm-hmm. they have such long careers.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Curry was Pennywise the Clown.
Yeah.
Right? He was also Dr. Frankenfurter mm-hmm. from Rocky Horror and Clue. Like, there's just, even though you can't really recognize his voice, there's mm-hmm. a sort of menace associated with it.
Yeah.
Same thing with Christopher Lloyd. He's played both villains and heroes. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that fits into the not trusting him or not knowing whether to trust him.
I'm going to say Doc Brown from, like, the most iconic right. role. And that's someone who facilitates a journey, right? So he's, like, facilitating their journey. He's, like, the, he's, like, caretaking their journey.
Right, because he's always really watching out for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Babes in the Wood.
Yeah.
In this episode, we're... gives up.
It's starting to get colder.
Like, yes, it's getting colder.
Mm-hmm. He wants to go to sleep.
Right, which is like giving up.
Yeah, and he's like, why are we trying to leave? We're never going to leave this place.
Right.
Let's just come to terms with we're just going to be here forever.
Which is very sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, if he gives up, he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And
even at this point, I think there's like... tree roots growing over him, or like there's leaves starting to cover him. Right,
because what we learn is the children that the beast takes turn into the trees.
Mm-hmm. Greg, does he fall asleep?
Or he does, but he's not giving up. He's like, oh, we're gonna go to sleep now. I'm gonna think of a plan. Mm-hmm. And then he has this dream.
He has a dream. He goes into the clouds. Which is weird
because it's like a dream inside of a dream or whatever.
And it seems like real like heaven-like imagery.
Right. And it's again, it's like 1930s rubber hose style animation.
Yeah, like Cuphead.
Like Cuphead, right. Like early Disney, early like Fleischer Brothers.
Like extremely early animation in general. Right. I took this screenshot of the Wikipedia page of what the show's visual style is based on.
Uh-huh.
This is the series art was inspired by a variety of sources, including the 1890s McLaughlin Brothers board game Game of Frog Pond, illustrations by Gustave Doré for Cervantes' Don Quixote, old illustrations for the Hans Christian Andersen story The Tinderbox, the Cheshire Cat illustration by John Tenniel from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, and the Dogville comedy short films.
I gotta look all this up.
Yeah, it's a really interesting stuff.
None of this is coming to mind of anything.
I'll send it to you. Yeah, I can picture the Gustave Doré stuff and the Cheshire Cat illustration. No. But the other stuff, I don't know. Mikhail referenced chromo lithography, vintage Halloween postcards.
Yeah, I can see that.
Big time. Magic lantern slides and photographs of New England foliage to create the show's style.
The title cards, like those are magic lantern slides. Mm-hmm. The circular sort of like projector slides things. Interesting.
Sometimes in this one, in this chapter too, it'll just be like a circle. Like you'll see
the iris effect.
Yes, yeah.
Which is something you'd see in early cinema mm-hmm. and early animation. Which is interesting because it's like they go from animated to more animated. Like it's like more rudimentary animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is a weird like heaven. But we see the North Wind is mm-hmm. the villain. Right. And North Wind is the, you know, often in literature and art is the representation of like winter coming, mm-hmm. which of course is like death.
Yeah.
Even fall is like a liminal space in between.
Sure, everything's death. Dying.
Right. It's in between life and death.
Mm-hmm. But Greg defeats the North Wind.
Right.
He fights him. He like pushes up his sleeves like people do when they're going to fight in cartoons that I love.
Yeah. And we meet like
an angel.
Yeah. I don't know if she's ever like given a name.
She's the ruler. She's the queen.
Right. And she's kind of like, we'll take Greg to heaven. She's like, you could come with us.
Yeah, but not your brother.
Right.
Yeah, which is weird. Or like, no, I can send you home.
Right.
She says it can send you home. She's like a Glinda character. She looks like Glinda, kind of. And she's like in golden sparkly light. And she's like, I can take you home, but not your brother.
So what does that really mean? Like he could wake up.
He'll survive, but he won't.
And Wart would die.
So, but he refuses to leave him.
Right, which is very sweet. He mm-hmm. even makes a deal with the beast that if he goes with the beast, he'll help wake
Wart. Right, so that's how that episode ends.
With him going with the beast.
With him walking away, like hand in hand, sort of, with the beast.
Like, yeah.
And saying, like, and then you'll tell us how to get home. He's like, yes, Gregory.
Yes.
So he, like, makes the sacrifice.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
Like, that he's, not that he's going to stay. Although it is like implied in the last episode that was like the deal, like he was going to stay and that Wart would get to go home.
Yeah.
It's like, Greg, you innocent little baby, you're too good for this world. And then chapter 9, my favorite one.
Into the unknown. And this is the one, it's in contemporary time. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, not our contemporary time, but it's...
We're out of the unknown.
I believe it's the 70s. It feels very probably 70s.
Probably the music playing is like a glam rock type of song.
And the costumes that people wear.
Yeah.
And even like what you were just talking about, the postcards, I feel like a lot of the Halloween imagery, especially the commercial Halloween imagery, mm-hmm. begins then mm-hmm. in the 70s. Even some of like the decorations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Halloween night.
Yeah.
And
Wart's just putting together a costume from some stuff he finds in the attic.
Right.
So he can go to the football game where his crush Sarah is the mascot. Right.
And by the way, he finds a Union uniform.
Yeah.
But you see the hat too, which he doesn't use. So it's like, is he related to a Union?
Maybe.
By the way, folks at home, remember Unions are the good guys. So it's really interesting.
Mm.
And he makes a tape for Sarah, a girl he has a crush on.
Yeah. And it's like him playing the clarinet.
Yeah. And reading poetry. Mm. It's real bad stuff. And he... So he goes to like the football game to sort of see her, right?
Yes. He runs into Greg along the way, who's been doing chores for old lady Daniels.
Yes.
Yes, sir, young man.
And he's like, hey, remember when you said we were going to look for frogs and we haven't done it yet?
Yeah. So now Greg is tagging along to the football game.
Yeah.
He goes, he's like, hey, can I see that cassette for a second? And Wart's like, sure. And then he's like, here, I'll go give it to Sarah, and like takes off.
Yeah, he doesn't get that his brother would be embarrassed.
Yeah.
He thinks he's like helping the situation mm-hmm. by like blowing up his spot.
Yeah.
And then all the other kids are like, oh, you Wart like Sarah.
And he puts it in her jacket. So then Wart tries to go get it from her jacket while she's changing out of her mascot costume. And this like big football guy's like, hey, what are you doing? You trying to spy on her?
Yeah.
He's like, watch out, Sarah. There's some creeps around here, which I love. Sarah's... It's another one where it's like this stereotype of like the jock who's mean, but actually he's looking out for her, which is so nice.
Yeah.
Because like Wart looks like a creep in that moment.
Yeah.
So he follows
Sarah's got a very cute, like, sort of simple voice.
Yeah.
She reminds me almost a little bit of, like, Patty Mayonnaise.
Yeah. Well,
she's nothing to be afraid of.
No. She's so kind.
Yeah.
Like, she's very sweet. She's got like a real laid back chill voice. She's also got one of my favorite lines in the whole series. She's also
an African-American character.
Yes. And she's got a skeleton. You only know it from her hands.
Right. Because she's got a skeleton.
Skeleton face.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I wonder if that's like when Beatrice like dresses up like the skeleton and dances, if like
he's like seeing the skeleton. Seeing
her. Yeah.
The whole thing with skeletons, it's like, oh, and she's dressed as a skeleton is interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like the thing he's
yeah
afraid of.
And then this other nerd in his class, Jason Funderburger, also likes Sarah, but it seems like Sarah does not like him.
He's been referencing, nice, he's been mentioning Jason Funderburger so throughout the series. Like this big, and he's like this dude, short kid in like an olive green suit.
Right. He reminds me of like,
he talks like this.
He reminds me of the in The Simpsons, the John Lovitz character that like also liked Marge.
Oh, okay. He kind of like Artie Ziff.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like Artie Ziff and Hans Molman. He's like both of them. And it's funny because he'll say something that's so uncool.
Yeah.
And then Wirt will be like, Funderburger. Like, oh, yeah. Dad it again. One point they're in the Sarah and Jason and the other characters are like going to the cemetery, and he's like, Sarah, there's a ghost behind you, and it's like, so it so doesn't land, and she whispers, she's like, it's okay, Funderburger. It's so good.
Yes, he's a nerd, but the only thing that he has on Wirt is he's confident. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid to just talk to Sarah. You know, when they're sitting in the cemetery, he's like, they hold hands for a second.
He tries to hold her hand. And she's like, he's like, dude, you're holding my hand.
And then the other girl's like, you can hold my hand, Funderburger.
I don't care. Oh, they go to this house party.
Yeah.
Costume for the Halloween party.
Somebody's dressed like Chewbacca, which also made me think of the 70s.
Oh, okay. Oh, I never noticed that. All right. So, it's like, you know what? The bicycle. Her bicycle is a very 70s bicycle because it's got that like metal, like chrome tube on the back of it that looks like an ET bike. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? Probably the 70s. So they go to this house party, and Sarah's like super psyched to see Wirt. Wirt is just there to try to get the cassette out of her jacket.
Right.
She invites him to the cemetery, and he's like, oh, are you guys going to do anything there? And she's like, you know, just hang out, probably just drink some age appropriate drinks. And he's like, oh, like juice and stuff. She's like, yeah, just age appropriate stuff, like nothing illegal.
Very cute.
Which is like, of course, they're just going to drink in a cemetery, which is what kids do. But because it's on Cartoon Network, it's so great. So they go to the cemetery. Wirt and Greg, even though they were invited, he's just like sneaking around following them because he's still trying to get this tape.
They hide behind two
tombstones.
And the one Wirt behind is Quincy Endicott.
Right.
I couldn't see which one Greg was behind because I was like, is that another character?
I didn't notice. But then Greg is like, I'm going to be a diversion. I'm an elephant. And then we finally find out that he's an elephant in this episode.
And he comes out. And they're like, oh, is that Wirt's little brother?
And they're like, Wirt. And they're like, Wirt, we can see you, man. They're there. The cops show up to break up the party.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, what are you doing? Get out of here. And they all scatter.
Right.
And then Wirt and Greg. Let's run. Wirt and Greg climb over the garden wall.
Right. Because the we see as they enter the cemetery, it says garden.
Right. And then in that moment, we also hear the frog.
Yes.
So they follow them over. They end up on the train tracks. Greg finds the frog. And then the train comes. And then it cuts to black. And then it's like interspersed with shots of them rolling down the hill and landing in the water.
And then he wakes up, but he's waking up in where we just left off in the last episode.
Right.
And Beatrice is waking him up and says, Greg is gone.
Right.
And they realize that the beast has Greg.
The beast has him.
And that goes into the last episode.
Right. Which is The Unknown.
Right.
Chapter 10.
It's now snowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very white. The sort of autumn is over.
And it's night. It seems like it's just...
Yeah.
Oh, well, he does wake up in the day. He wakes up in a tree surrounded by bluebirds.
Right. The mother from the Partridge Family is the voice of Beatrice's mother. And then...
he goes out to find Greg.
We see Greg with... the beast. There's this weird riddle thing that he does where he's like...
He's like a silver strand. And so he gives him a spider's like piece of gossamer. And then he's like a golden comb. He finds a honeycomb.
Cup, but he's like... Yeah, but he's like...
Put the sun in this cup.
Right.
Which he just puts like on a log and like the sun sets. I don't know. It's like diversion. It's like busy work basically to keep him there until he freezes to death, I think. Okay. I think he's just keeping him with him. Like, oh, if you do all these things...
But he's still so optimistic.
I know. It's so cute. If you do all these things, I'll send you home.
Right.
But he has no intention of sending him home. He's just keeping him there.
Right.
Which also reminds me of like a fairy tale or something. Like if it's all a ruse, like if you do these things, but it's like you're never going to get back. And I can't think of, or if it's reminding me of like Persephone staying in the underworld, like the thing, like eating pomegranates or something. Like, I don't know. It reminds me of something. In the meantime.
Being stuck
and having to do stuff. In the meantime, Wirt is leaving to find him, and he has this line. It's like Beatrice's mother is like, "You'll be no good to him dead." And he's like, "I was never good to him alive either," which is like, "Oh, Wirt."
We learn that all the trees are children. Mm-hmm. All the trees of the woods are children,
mm-hmm.
Or the Edelwood trees,
right?
Or children that the beast, I guess, captured or killed or whatever mm-hmm. it is. I think this is where we learn that the woodsman is the lantern bearer,
mm-hmm.
and what the woodsman believes is that his daughter, who mm-hmm. he lost to the beast, he believes that her soul is in the fire. And that's why he's constantly
right.
getting the wood and getting the ore out of it, because he feels like he has to keep it going.
When we find Greg, he is wrapped up now in the Edelwood roots.
Yeah.
And Wirt and Beatrice are like, "Oh my God." And he opens his mouth and he's like, he admits that he stole the rock
right.
and like leaves come out of his mouth. And Beatrice is like, "Oh my God, they're growing inside you too." And he's like, "Nah, I just ate some leaves."
So good. So good. Yeah. There's a sort of.
And then he kind of like, they're like, Greg. Cause now it seems like he lost consciousness. Yeah. Like he sacrificed himself.
And now there's a sort of confrontation between the woodsman, the boys, and the beast.
And the beast. Yeah. He takes the lantern. He gets the lantern. There's like a fight. The woodsman shows up.
Yeah.
A fight ensues.
Right.
There's some.
He sort of knocks down the woodsman, and he looks like he wants to trade. He wants to make Greg. He wants to make Wirt the new bearer.
Lantern keeper. Yeah.
Because we learn that it's not the little girl. It's actually the beast soul.
The beast soul. Right. So it's a great moment because Greg is dying.
Right.
Wirt now has possession of the lantern because in the ensuing scuffle, like, he somehow got possession of the lantern. And the beast is like, "I'll make a deal with you. Yeah. We'll keep your brother's soul going in the lantern, but you just have to do what the woodsman does.
Yeah.
Do you accept?" And in the and like the woodsman looks scared because he doesn't know what's going to happen to his daughter's soul. And Wirt is like, "Okay." And then he takes a step forward and he's like, "Wait, that's dumb."
Right.
And then he goes to break the lantern and the beast flips out.
Right.
And so he's like, "Kind of seems like it's your soul in here."
Right. And the woodsman then realizes what's happening.
This whole time he's been keeping the beast alive,
right.
not preserving his daughter's soul. And he's like, "How could I have like not known all this right. time?"
It's also, I think, a great, to go back to the idea of like a lucid dream,
mm-hmm.
when Wirt is like, "Wait, no, this is stupid."
Right.
It reminds me of like that moment in a lucid dream where you realize you're dreaming.
You're dreaming, yeah.
Like he's like gonna go with the beast. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Wait, no, this is stupid."
Yeah.
"I'm not gonna do that."
And it's such a coming of age moment because he's also like, "This is not my fight either. Like
I have
a different life," because he hands it to the woodsman. He's like, "I'm not gonna break it." He's like, "This is your thing."
Right.
"I got my own problems to deal with."
Right. It's true.
And he gives Beatrice the scissors.
Yeah.
And then they just, like, you don't know where they go. He's like, "I'm just going to go home." But they don't ever tell you how they got home. It's like, "I'm just going to go home. I'm going to wake up."
We see them in a hospital.
Yeah. It's like you see them underwater, you see them wake up, and then you see them on the bank of whatever like body of water they're on, and then you just see them in an ambulance. And the lights are always so jarring to me, like the lights of the ambulance that they include, because it's just them in the back of an ambulance with like red light and blue light on them, which I think is a cool thing in animation I haven't seen before.
Now, do you...
They're in the hospital.
Right. I love the characters, so I love that it of course it has a Cartoon Network ending, but...
Mm-hmm.
There was at least a little part of me that felt like I wish they had the guts to kill the kids.
Well, I like that they almost kill the kids a couple times.
They do.
And in the second to last episode, you're like, "Oh, okay, this is where they are. This is what happened.
Yeah.
They are dying."
Right.
They show you how they're almost dying and then they take it away. Like, no, we'll bring them back. They're alive.
Right.
Because then it's like, what lessons have they learned from this?
Right.
You know, so like, what was the point of the whole journey? Right. Just to die, I guess.
And Wirt seems much more fucked up than Greg. Greg's like up and about.
Oh my God, it's so cute.
And Wirt's in the bed.
He wakes up and he's like, where's Greg? Which is great because finally he's like, he cares about his little brother. Mm. And then Greg is like the like fanciest little boy. His hair is like coiffed.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got these great pajamas on. He's wearing like black little shiny shoes and he's holding his frog and he's like holding court. He's telling the story.
Yeah, yeah.
All the Halloween partygoers seem to be in the hospital room. Yeah. And then of course he settles on the name for the frog.
Jason Funderburger.
Which is Jason Funderburger.
Which is like, he's like,
you mean me? And he's like, no, I mean Jason Funderburger.
Well, yeah, I love that Greg, in his sort of childish confidence, just roasts Funderburger.
So good.
That motherfucker gets what he's got coming to him. And Sarah's like, sees the tape. She found the tape and she's like, I don't have a tape player, but maybe. And then we're confidently is like, you can listen to it at my house. We can listen to it together.
Well, let's listen to some other things first.
Yeah.
And then the narration goes. And so the story ends and everyone is content with the ending.
Yeah. But we see before it ends, Greg is holding the frog and inside the frog is the bell lighting up.
Yeah.
So.
They were really there.
They were really there.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping we'd see, like in The Wizard of Oz, some corollaries to the people they met in the unknown in their real life. But it just seems that they're real people in the unknown.
Yeah, right. Because after, in the end, we do see like a sort of epilogue of like where Beatrice and her family are.
Right.
I really love the moment where the woodsman daughter comes back.
Yeah.
Because like.
He's sitting on the porch and she just comes out of the house where it's like the beast's life was sort of keeping her from existing. Right. So like once he died, she got to come back to reality.
They never totally explained why or where she was the whole time.
It also seems like Quincy Endicott died because Marguerite Gray is now looking at a portrait of him.
Oh.
So it seems like, oh, okay, he's passed on now.
See, I missed it. I gotta watch it a
fourth
time.
There's so much there.
It really is. And it's denser than it appears at first glance.
Now, I'm going to ask you, do you want more Over the Garden Wall?
No.
You don't want any more?
No. I know that there are comics.
There are comics currently ongoing. There's graphic novels. There's like one shots that they do. Not one shots, but they have like graphic novels.
And it's all just them in it, in the unknown?
Some of them act as a sequel. Some of them act as a prequel. Some of them are side adventures that happened as like interstitials
in
between.
To me, that makes the most sense of like who knows how long they were there.
Right. Like they could have been there for, you know, years.
But what are the sequel ones?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm
interested in checking it out. But I kind of...
It's a sort of like a perfect little thing on its own.
Yeah, it's like people ask, do you want another season of Gravity Falls? It's like, no, it's perfect the two seasons that is. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to go back. Like, it's just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It you don't need more. I mean, how would you do it? Like, you know, almost kill them again? Like,
right.
That's
what the creator of She-Ra said. Well, not creator, but like, what's her name? The showrunner?
Oh, no, Noelle Stevens.
Yeah, she said like she'd love to revisit the characters, but she doesn't want to put them in peril anymore.
Right.
Like she just wants to have like a happy adventure with them.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's over. It's a story that's over. Mm. It is the kind of thing that I want to revisit every fall.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I wish
it was bigger than it was because I'd love to dress Henry and Peter up as Wirt and Greg.
I know. Yeah.
It's like a costume no one will get.
Yeah, so you were there watching in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any?
I feel like
I hear very little of it.
Very, very little. It is sort
Jenny Nicholson talks about it in one of her videos.
Okay.
And she's the only...
There's a big Etsy showing like creators who make stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of artwork.
Like
beautiful artwork of the characters. Because the thing is so gorgeous to look at on its own. People are just like recreating it and making like really cute little dolls and paintings and
like
awesome
I've had,
things.
I think last year, all fall, I had like some image of it as the background on my phone. It is beautiful, like this thing you got me, this tarot card. It's like, it is this beautiful, perfect autumnal imagery.
Mm-hmm. It's spooky, but it gets really scary at times, but it's also very sweet.
Yeah, I think it's very appropriate for children.
I think so.
You know, it's only scary in that sort of fairy tale way.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, though, is that Patrick, so this won Emmys. It won an Emmy, I think, for, or maybe two Emmys, a Primetime Creative Arts Emmy for Outstanding Animated Feature.
Yeah.
And Patrick Mahale has kind of done nothing since. Mm-hmm. He worked on some more Adventure Time. I think he worked on some other shows and is now attached to a project finally, an upcoming project, hopefully you know, coronavirus hasn't destroyed all prospects of it, but it's Pinocchio.
Really?
Yeah, which this kind of also reminds me of Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah.
The way the characters look.
I recently heard that you're
And there's like a Geppetto type character in the show.
Yeah. I recently heard that you're going to be seeing a lot more animation because animation is something that's easily producible in this time because you can do it remotely.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen like on soap operas, like they'll do kisses with dummies?
No.
Have you seen that? Like it'll be like a close up of a woman, close up of a man, and then like the man goes to kiss the woman, but it's clearly like a dummy.
Oh my God.
Weird stuff. So I don't know much about this creator. And it's, you know, other than he's the creator of it, but there are 17 people credited as writers. And there's a director, Nate Cash. So I don't know much about where it came from, but it does seem like some, it seems like an idea that was born fully formed. You know, sometimes shows have a pilot and then they grow, but whatever this idea was, he seemed to know from the get-go what it was.
Well, yeah, he brought it to Cartoon Network as Tome of the Unknown. And he they were trying to develop a series, and then the story he wanted to tell ended up being more appropriate for like a mini series. And then it was going to be 18 episodes, but then budget constraints forced them to cut it, which I kind of feel like that's interesting to explore the comics because he wanted 8 more episodes. So maybe we have like 8 more.
Do we know if he's involved in the comics?
He is involved in the first couple of comics, and then I looked and it's different writers for a lot of them. And I think he's sort of not involved anymore, or maybe he comes back, I'm not sure. But he's involved in the first few comics.
You know what's funny? I can't think of any other animated miniseries.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some stuff happening now with Steven Universe and Adventure Time. There are like animated movies.
Yeah.
Like the Futurama would do like one every year or something in between their coming back.
Those movies, yeah.
Yeah. But not so much a mini series that I can think of.
It is an interesting, unique thing.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know, even just to look at it, it's just, it is like a little postcard come to life.
Yeah.
It is this beautiful little, it's like a section of Home Goods come to life.
Yeah, it's so, it's like the promise of fall. It's like so, everything you want fall to be is this series.
Yeah, yeah. And just like in real life, it sadly ends in winter.
Yeah.
Which nobody wants.
Nobody wants that.
I think we really did it.
Yeah. I love this series. I wholeheartedly recommend it. Go out and find it. It's worthwhile.
We did it. We did another Halloween episode. We
did it. I love this one. It's
a
good one.
This is the third year of Halloween's.
Is it?
Well, the very first episode of PCMC would have been a Halloween special.
Oh, what? Okay. Was Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark a Halloween special?
No, it was just a random episode.
It was just random? Okay.
The first episode was sort of Halloween time, but we was the beginning, so we just made the first episode. And then last year and this year.
Okay.
And then for the next 30 years of this podcast.
At least.
At least. Janine Funderburger Gagliardi.
Love it.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for bringing this series into my life.
Yay! I'm so happy.
Thank you for this gift.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your gift. I can't wait to put it up among all my Halloween stuff. This is fantastic.
Stuff.
I love it.
Remember, those two children at the end are dying.
They're going into the unknown.
Yeah. This is in PCMC Halloween 2020.
Yeah.
We got more Halloween stuff coming up, so stay with us all month.
All right.
We end every episode by saying...
Go. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.